You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
When I check into a hotel room and we're with the Alice Cooper band, it's a Hilton. When the vampires check into a hotel room, it's usually a, you know, Ritz-Carlton. So there's a little bit of a difference. And I step on the bus, they step onto the private jet.
Yeah, right. So.
Oh my God, guys, you're listening to 2020. This is the show. I'm Benny Goodman. We're supposed to do this fast, so I'm just going to get right into it. I'm with my cohorts, my compatriots, my partners in crime, which we're trying to trademark by saying it as much as possible. If you haven't subscribed yet, 2020-D.com. Siobhan Cronin and Corey Pesa. How are you?
I'm deaf now.
Yeah, very deaf. And I think it'd be difficult to trademark partners in crime, but we can go for it and give it a shot.
This week we have Ryan Roxy, who you might know from Alice Cooper's band, as well as In the Trenches with Ryan Roxy, as well as he has a guitar. I can't even speak. A 12. Is it a step program?
Nope. System 12.
System 12 program where he'll teach you how to play guitar much better than I'm capable.
Yeah, the System 12 guitar method.
So anyway, let's just dive right into it. Part one with Ryan Roxy. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another episode of 2020. I'm Siobhan Cronin here, as always, with my compatriots, my cohorts, my co-hosts. Earlier in the day than usual, we've got Benny Goodman and Corey Pesa. How's it going, guys?
Waking up.
Hello, Siobhan, with the cone accento, with the S-H-A-V-A-N, but it could be Chevron.
We're sporting our coffees today instead of the other poisons that we usually sport
this
on this
Sprite.
Episode.
I already drank the coffee.
Yeah, except our guest.
Our guest is not, though. So let me introduce him first. Today, I'm so excited. We have Ryan Roxy, guitar player for Hello. Alice Cooper, of many other projects. Also host of In the Trenches with Ryan. Is it Ryan Roxy or In the Trenches with Ryan? What's the proper?
Just In the Trenches, however you want to Google it, it's fine.
Okay.
You know, put my name in there, podcast. It usually comes up.
Yeah, so one of our prior episodes when I was researching for Satchel, I came across, I think it was an episode that you had with him. So that's kind of how I got to know him a little bit. So discovered you and, you know, really cool podcast, obviously a great musician. So I'm excited to dive in and talk more to you.
Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it. And I appreciate you guys making the time difference work because I'm basically here at the North Pole right now. And you guys are, you know, in my home country, but... My latest home country has been Sweden for quite a number of years. Luckily, I've been able to travel back and forth from the U.S. to Sweden for quite a while.
So how did you end up in Sweden in the first place? I'm curious about
that.
Yeah,
are you doing the queen thing? Like, did you make so much money over in the United States that you have to go to Sweden for tax purposes so you can have, like, the Freddie Mercury excesses?
No, because then Sweden would tax you more. Aren't you, like, Sweden is... definitely known for
something else.
It's a
socialist
country.
I'm in the 70s, bro.
Yeah. No, but it's, even in the 70s, it was high. You know what I'm saying?
So you've met Benny. He's going to say lots of incorrect things very confidently throughout the episode.
It's okay because a
it's
lot
all
of people.
Fake news.
At least you said Sweden and not Switzerland because that's the first mistake most people make right out of the gate.
I love my watch, man. It's great.
Well, it's either like, oh, so you're from, I have a friend that lives in Switzerland. You guys must know each other. It's like, no, we're like 3 hour plane ride away. So it would be like me saying, do you know some guy in, Toledo, Ohio? And you go, yeah. But I live in Sweden. Our guitarist, Tommy Henriksen from the Alice Cooper Band, he lives in Switzerland. And a lot of times that distinction is not clarified. Especially to most people that live in the United States because, as we all know, the
we
world
don't know geography.
Alls around the United States.
Exactly, yeah.
You know?
I bet you there's some guy out there that's like, there's two guys in Alice Cooper's band? I thought there was just one dude that lived in Switzerland.
Always remember, the entire flat earth revolves around the United States.
Right, of course.
It's with all the dinosaurs. With the dinosaurs.
Oh,
the dinosaurs and the guns. They have the guns killing the dinosaurs.
Wow.
Yeah. So what
right into conspiracies. I'm not sure if I believe that yet.
Paul McCartney was there, though, with Tupac Shakur just smoking one.
All right. Again, Ben is going to say a lot of bullshit that is not true, but very confidently so.
I will wait until Jon Stewart confirms it, and then we'll be fine.
Right.
No, but as far as getting over to Sweden, like, what? That's, you know, it's obviously a more unique.
Start.
Yeah.
I was married before to a Swedish girl, and we met in the States, and we lived there for many number of years. We moved over. I always wanted, since I was a little kid, to live in Europe. I don't know why, and especially the colors of Sweden, I think, were something. So you can call it like this, you know, fulfilling your destiny of whatever. But even in the early days of going to the International House of Pancakes, I would go for the Swedish pancakes. That would be my pancake of choice. And and eventually I wanted to live there. I was married to a Swede. We moved there. We have two kids. They're growing up. We've since split apart many years ago. And I'm still here, though. And not for long. I mean, there will be another destination. I remarried a couple years ago to a very cool girl from Cape Town, South Africa.
Wow.
So I know it sounds kind of like a, you know, James Bond film, but it's really not. It's just like I just happened to meet a girl from Sweden, moved to Sweden. We got split up.
So you went from ABBA to Dave Matthews.
There you go. Yeah. Wow.
I was going to say you didn't move there just to write pop hits for America.
I would prefer ABBA to Dee Antwood.
Yeah, okay. Well, fair enough.
Yeah, yeah.
Fair enough.
And for those of you listeners that don't know Dee Antwood, that is the answer, and that should be your next Google search and rabbit hole to go down.
Oh, I've seen them live a bunch of times.
What?
So are you a fan of Dee Antwood?
Yolani fucking Fesser. You've seen Yolani fucking Fesser.
Oh, my God, dude. I saw him at Lollapalooza. I saw him at the House of Blues.
I never got to see them live.
The thing is, so yeah, there's a lot of rap. I've seen a lot of rappers, right? A guy like Eminem, he has a lot of backing tracks. And the tracks he's not doing where he doesn't have backing tracks, you can hear how winded he is. He's been doing it a long time. Those guys are fire. Like, they literally sound unbelievable. And their stage show is like tantamount to Marilyn Manson when Marilyn Manson was actually edgy.
Well, I mean, there's no doubt about it. Ninja and Yolandi, I think I pronounce their names. Yeah, I have hard times pronouncing names, just like Siobhan, as we went.
You just killed it. That was great.
I think I got it right. But I was turned on to that band before I met my wife Bianca who's from Cape Town, but she speaks fluent Afrikaans. So I didn't know, like, if you don't know Afrikaans, you kind of only know half of the band, because she's constantly translating what Afrikaans words that they use in between those songs. And I'm not sure, Corey or Siobhan, if you guys have been heavily into Dee Antwood.
Just kind of
coming
across.
Paul, who's next to me, our drummer, Paul, is a super Dee Antwood fan. And okay. I mean... But just so you know, like a song, so you know, Siobhan is like, I rub my dick on expensive things, I think is one of the songs that they sing.
Fatty Boom Boom is like, yeah. I think you're freaky.
You're freaky and I like you a lot is a terrifying video that if you haven't seen it, just as like a, it's in the same vein of like Nine Inch Nails or Tool or Marilyn Manson back in the day where it's just like, you'll leave feeling dirty.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure that they've been on festivals in Europe that we've done. Because I remember hearing that name and like being surprised at what it actually was. Because I was thinking like it would be a rock group or I don't know, something. Like,
but it
I
didn't is know kind of a expect. Rock group. To me, at one point, I was saying in some interviews that they're like the most rock and roll band out there, even though they do hip hop, techno, and, you know, rap all together into this weird, like, sort of.
It's the attitude. It's like that Sex Pistols attitude. Like, we don't give a fuck. They really don't give a fuck. They do a lot. Like, if you do any research on these guys, like, there aren't a lot of fucks given in the DM.
No. I think the whole reason why they didn't end up breaking as big as, because obviously they were big in the States for a while, but I think their A&R guy was Jimmy Iovine. I'm not mistaken. And I think they kind of called him out in more than a couple songs, and I think, you know, as we all know, when you start sort of bad rapping the record label, whether it's in your songs or whether
Big Brother is listening to you, Ryan. Yeah, Big Brother is listening.
I've seriously been indie for so many years now that what can they do? I've hung around long enough that people are finally starting to notice, you know, isn't that old Mick Jagger quote? And I've been around and I've been on a couple major labels. My first band that I was with, Electric Angels, we were on Atlantic Records. And, I mean, we friggin' tried to play the game. We really did. But, you know, we were up against a lot of bands in the 80s that were like the Wingers of the world, mm-hmm. Skid Row of the world, you know, a lot of bands that were like really, really popular on Atlantic Records during that time and during that era. And it was just hard for us to be in that game because we weren't hair metal, even though we would open up and tour with some of the best hair metal bands out right there. I mean, we did our first U.S. tour with a band called Danger Danger.
Mm-hmm.
We got Naughty mm-hmm. Naughty. And we and we also did another tour with a band called Hurricane, yeah. which had the Kelly Hansen is the lead singer, who's now the singer of Foreigner. So you realize that all these bands and all these musicians that are still touring today, I know them from back, you know, when I had a foot in the old school. And luckily I was living in Los Angeles at probably one of the coolest times to ever live there. I'm sure there's people that come from different.
Oh, we've heard all the stories of our previous guests.
I love hearing these stories. Yeah.
You mentioned though that you know you were kind of dabbling in playing the game. Obviously, the industry's changed since the 80s. But what about that game? Were you either not able to fully play or you know?
I just think our band was a little bit more 70s, mm-hmm. like and had our foot more into those English bands, with obviously my favorite band being Cheap Trick, who were obviously influenced by the Beatles. But put it this way, we made our first album in London with Tony Visconti producing, who's a huge producer, produced all the T-Rex albums, produced some great Bowie tracks as well, Young Americans, and produced another band called The Alarm, which was really great as well. He's just done string arrangements for Paul McCartney, Band on the Run, for Christ's sake. The guy is just a legend. But he was an English producer. So our album inherently had an English sort of vibe to it, maybe a couple of years too early, you know? Because then a couple of years later, all these cool bands from England start busting out: Oasis, Radiohead, Happy Monday, Charlatans UK, and they have this sort of English production value where I don't think our album did, and it was hard to compete with those albums that were coming out that had more of the Bow Hill snare drum, or basically the Mike Clink production, and you know. All these, I know I'm dropping a lot of names that if you look at the liner notes, they're all
there. Well, Mike Clink, I mean, obviously Appetite for Destruction. So, yes. Like, I mean, yes. Yeah, that's a good drum sound. I'm a fan.
You know? Absolutely.
So, like, I mean, listen, so you mentioned something very important. If you look at the liner notes, I mm-hmm. did. You know what
yeah,
I mean? Because I think it's very important to understand, like, Martin Birch was the sound of Iron Maiden.
There
and
you
if
go.
You listen, you know, and if you listen to the Zeppelin stuff, it's like, okay, I don't know a lot about mastering, but I know there's this guy, George Marino, that kept coming up. So the
George
first
Marino
dude
at Sterling Sound I
had ever asked for to master my record, which we paid a shit ton of money, was George Marino. And ironically, it was like towards the end of his life and his ears were done. And I was like, I don't feel like this sounds very good. So we sent it to Ted Jensen, who was another guy I had seen in so many records. And, you know, it's one of those things where you have to learn. If you're interested in, like, look at what's behind you, the guitars, all the recording studio stuff.
Yeah,
you don't
amazing.
Just get to that level by not reading that Mike Clink did this or that Ron St. Germain did that or Eddie Kramer did these records. And the reason they were awesome was X, Y, and Z. And then go, oh, that's amazing. I should do that.
The exact same reason why we had George Marino produce or master our record, the Electric Angels album, was because it was on the back of every single record that I had
Rest
grown up
peace.
Listening to. And we did it and mixed it in New York. And just so you know, if you're going rail down the liner notes, it was Jim Mitchell that got all those great sounds on that Appetite for Destruction and the Illusions records. He was engineering it as well. And Jim Mitchell, I know for years and years because we worked together in Slash's Snake Pit as well, and he produced my very first sort of solo type project band called Dad's Porno Mag. And that was a co-production between yes. the band, Jim Mitchell, and Pink's drummer, Mark Shulman.
Oh, wow.
So you see all these names and all these guys and musicians sort of all sort of...
yeah, it's a small
listen,
world
it all goes back to together. Iron Maiden. Do you remember Iron yeah, Maiden's sure. records, a real live one and a real dead one?
A real live one and a real dead one.
Well, if you bought those records, there was a fold-out of the entire lineage of Iron Maiden, of all the bands that Dave Murray and Steve Harris and Bruce Dickinson and Paul Di'Anno and all. And it showed you like the
like
6 degrees
tree.
To everybody. And if there's one thing that I've learned and that we've learned in talking to people on the show is that it's all the same people like living okay. in this. So it's not surprising because it's like, yeah, you have that web. I bet you could draw your own little Iron Maiden / Ryan Roxy, you know, lineage of all the people that you've worked with. Because, I mean, it's ridiculous as far as from the Slashes of the world to you're playing with Alice Cooper, which I consider just the definition besides your show that you have. But you're a defender of the faith, sir, which in the sense that you are bringing a legend's music still alive for a whole new group of people. You are defending the faith of rock and roll. Besides
carrying
the guitars,
torch.
You're carrying the torch.
The torch and passing it on to the next
generation.
And
teaching them. You're teaching those people some culture.
Just remember, we're all, you know, you have that saying of you're 6 degrees from Kevin Bacon. You're only 6 degrees from Blaze Bailey. Because Blaze Bailey is actually one of the guys who I had the privilege of having on my podcast, a really cool episode. I didn't know a lot about him before I did the podcast. And you find out that he's done so much and he's been in the trenches. He's been working his ass off. He was working his ass off before Iron Maiden, during his tenure in Iron Maiden, and then all these years afterwards, because he did make a good amount of records. I think that Blaze doesn't get mentioned, you know, like the way Paul does. As you know, Paul Di'Anno does. If we're going to go down the Iron Maiden,
he's the Gary Cherone of Iron Maiden, and I love Gary Cherone. He's one of my friends, and I think he's one of the greatest singers ever. But if you talk about Van Halen, no one mentions Gary. They're like fire in the hole over eight talking about love. Doesn't happen ever.
If Blaze Bailey is the Gary Cherone of Iron Maiden, I am the Bruce Kulick of the Alice Cooper band.
I love Bruce. I love, that's my favorite. See, I'm younger, so I
Bruce
like, that's my favorite,
that,
that's
though.
My favorite Kiss era because I loved his playing so much because I didn't grow up going, Ace was the best. I said, wow, this Bruce guy is really tasty.
Well, the only reason I used to say that was because at one point I had surpassed being in the band, in the Alice Cooper band, longer than the original guys. And that's the way kind of Bruce Kulick was. He was in the band longer than Ace at one point in his career, right? So, I mean, now I could say, you know, I'm the Tommy of, you could switch it, but I like saying Bruce because it'll wind Bruce Kulick up if he does hear this. Hello, Bruce.
Bruce is the man. And RIP to
hello.
To
he's
Bob.
Like, hello, Newman. Hello, yeah. Bruce.
Go ahead, Ben.
No, I was saying RIP to his brother, Bob, who was also a huge guy behind all the sounds, like the yep. step in for Bruce. Like, there was Bob every time. So, and I know he passed away, and Bruce has been trying to keep his legacy alive. So it's one of those things where, you know, cheers to the heavens, because that dude did a lot for rock and roll.
And not a lot of people know, he was a hell of a softball player. I was on the Sunday... No, seriously. I was on the Sunday Softball League that we would go and play softball on Sundays. And Bruce Kulick, or not Bruce, Bob was the captain of the team. And, oh, man, I hate when if I'm going to misplace the name. Gilby Clark was always there. Mark Danzeisen, great drummer, was there on the team as well. There was Eric Carr was playing.
Is Eric Carr good at softball?
He actually was. He really was.
So Eric Carr was not only an amazing drummer, but he softball.
Coordination.
Yeah. And who was it? The drummer of Mr. Big. Again.
Paul Torpy. Pat
yeah,
Torpy.
Pat Torpy. Yeah, Pat Torpy was on the team as well.
RIP as well to the heavens.
Yeah, yeah. I mean... Damn, that softball league killed us all.
Dude, holy shit, don't play softball with
don't
Ryan Roxy.
Anymore.
It'll fucking kill you, man. Holy fuck.
No, they were great. They were all great, all amazing guys to hang out with. I remember nothing but good times playing those games. And to be honest with you, that was part of the LA hang and everything that I miss now being here in Sweden, because there is no softball. There is no softball league. And this was years afterwards, actually. This wasn't when, you know, actually in the 1980s when there was the Cat House and it was the, you know, I was there at opening night at Ricky Rackman's Cat House. So we did have softball games then. But honestly, there'd be like guys would come and play with their boots on. You know, like they're sort of leather boots and cowboy boots. And
did so Lemmy come in full like Nazi garb and play?
It wasn't Lemmy. It was Danny from Faster.
That's kind of funny, though, because, you know, that sort of could have happened
easily.
But, he was playing pinball down the street.
If you could. Yeah. If you could have drugged.
Both.
How would you even say it?
Drugged, then dragged. Well,
if you would have dragged. We can't even, I'm having a brain fart of what's the right tense or word of it, but I don't think you can get him away from that pachinko game. I think it was a pachinko. It wasn't even really a video game. It was only like back in the old school days at the Rainbow Bar and Grill. Lemmy used to play this pachinko. Do you know what I'm talking about when I say it? Because it's a very old school game.
I don't think so.
It comes a pachinko is like an Asian type of pinball, but it's up on a big type of a wall, and it's a
don't they call
smaller.
That plinko, Bob? Isn't it called plinko?
Oh, where you like fling it up and you, it like comes down.
Yeah, it comes down and all these little things. Yeah. I call it pachinko. I maybe I completely made it up, or just Lemmy told it to me wrong one day. I don't know. He'd be by that machine.
Oh, but that's not, funny.
You know, now he's up in that big pachinko game. He's playing that big pachinko game in the sky, I guess.
Oh, well,
we
going.
Well, I have a good Lemmy story too. I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
No, please tell us the Lemmy story there's no such thing as a bad Lemmy story. It's kind
really
of oxymoronic.
I'm sure there's better Lemmy stories out there. And Corey, I apologize for cutting you off and with this one.
No, please.
But I got to play a song, a Beatles song, with Lemmy back in the USSR. And it was at the Cat Club on Sunset Boulevard. And here's the thing. I was really like suspect if he knew the words, because he was in the back and Slim Jim Phantom, who's the drummer of Stray Cats, is the drummer on stage. And he says, hey, I want to have Lemmy come up. And I go, okay, what song do you want to play? Let's do Back in the USSR. He goes, he's not going to go Back in the USSR. And I'm like, stupid me. How could I even doubt for a second? Not only did he know the perfect bass line and played it note for note, he knew every single word and harmony. When we went to the chorus, he started singing these Beatles harmony. So I mean, Lemmy, as heavy and as rock and as punk rock as he was, down in his soul, he was a very, very 50s, 60s Beatles guy, you know? And 50s music and Beatles music and traditional, you know, rock and roll back there. So, I mean, and I gained such respect, like I always had respect for Lemmy, but that day when we got to play Back in the USSR, man, that was a mind blower.
That's an amazing story. And I'm glad that it went down that path. Cause what I wanted to ask you was kind of how you got your early music influence and what sort of music you were drawn to early on. And just kind of like your background growing up in California, where you're from, right? So you ended up in LA at some point. How did you get into playing, or what was your early exposure to music? And, you know, how did you get drawn to a certain type of music over another?
I got to really thank AM radio, because back when I grew up, AM radio wasn't just talk radio, wasn't just politics, wasn't just sports, wasn't just, you know, UFO conspiracies or whatever. It was actual music. And there was a station up in the Bay Area where I grew up. I grew up outside of Oakland, called KFRC. And on any given morning, I would wake up to Dr. Don Rose. He would be the morning DJ. And he would play, and you have to understand, this is the 70s. So he would play disco, funk, and rock within, you know, three songs back to back to back. You'd hear Aerosmith back to back with ABBA, back to back to the Commodores. Then he'd go full circle again and play some Cheap Trick, and then you'd have Kool and the Gang. So it was like, it was a really cool mix of what all my influences ended up being when I played, you know, when I ended up taking up music for real.
It's like a musical s'more.
Basically, yeah.
Chocolate, that's amazing.
He always wants vanilla, more.
A little chocolate, a little vanilla, a little graham cracker in there. I love it.
You can decide what part has the groove.
Well, I was going to ask, at what point did you start, you know, wanting to learn music or guitar? Was that your first instrument? Like, how did you start engaging in it?
The guitar was on the couch. It was just laying there. It wasn't like a special brand of a guitar. It was just this big tobacco burst acoustic guitar. So I could just, you know, sort of strum it or whatever. I don't think, you know, neither of my parents played the guitar at all. It was just theirs, almost like a prop. And, but my dad played trumpet. So I started off with that in the march, you know, in the school band. And I, you know, quickly realized that, you know, I was this three vowels and always taking the spit out of your instrument. It was kind of gross as a kid.
Yeah. So then I moved to
my mom's instrument, which was drums, which I really, to this day, I love it. I'm not a good drummer at all, but I love to beat the shit out of stuff. You know, it's like boom, 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 boom. Beating this stuff out of drums. And it was really good for when my parents eventually did split up, because like almost every parental household was splitting up in the 70s. It was good therapy because I had a drum kit set up in the living room of the house, and then I would just bash away. And I realized, again, guitar had been already come into my life, but I realized that being a drummer, I wasn't going to be able to be in the front, which was off, which I wanted to.
How is the crowd supposed to see what's going on with those pants if you're playing drums? You could not be wearing pants. They don't know.
No one told Terry Bozzio this, but I mean,
well, he was the devil, man. He was the devil. He was the gatekeeper to titties and beer. So you can't apply Terry Bozzio. He is not a normal drummer of this world. That's not even a fair comparison, sir.
Spring Session M, still one of my favorite records. I listen to the, you know, when I turn people on to it, you know, that are of the younger generations, they, because that's one of those bands, Missing Persons, that I think gets overlooked a little bit. From such great music, and you realize that the musicianship. No, why?
It's too high pay grade for people. People want to hear Old Town Road. They're basic, and that's why it's the number one song. I understand this. I'm a DJ. I DJ parties, and people come up. Earth, Wind, and Fire, September. It wins every time. But new music, a lot of it's very, very basic. Missing Persons. Listen to that music. It's so complicated. It's so well written. It's so incredible that most people probably don't have the attention span or even the understanding to realize like what's
music.
Going on. Like you don't realize that Terry Bozzio is playing inhuman drums, which is why it's great, because it doesn't sound like he's trying. But the normal person doesn't digest that, which is why I feel like there's a lot of people that overlook that stuff, and you go back and you're like, holy crap. But it was way before its time in my mind.
Well, for anybody that wants to go educate themselves on some great 80s music, Spring Session M, Missing Persons. I know that the members were in Zappa's band before. And so that obviously gives them all this high pedigree. And I find their records. I think Warren, the guitar player, is he still currently in Duran Duran, correct?
Ben might know.
You know, I...
Come on, Corey. Come on, Corey. You're the research guy. Do it.
No, Ben is the resident nerd of all rock and roll history. I'm the classical music nerd, so anything pre-1900 is my jam.
Well, dude, I have a pretty cool... Well, it's not cool at all. It's tragic. Missing Persons story. I saw their last gig ever as Missing Persons because it couldn't have been more Spinal Tap, because the actual gig went down at Magic Mountain in Los Angeles. You know the place, the amusement park, Magic Mountain. They were playing. I was
Disneyland?
At the show.
Disneyland?
Huh?
Disneyland?
It's like Disneyland. It's actually called Magic Mountain.
Oh, it's called Magic Mountain. So it's not Magic Mountain at Disneyland. It's called
Six
Magic
Flags
Mountain.
Magic Mountain. So I go to see the show. Exactly. And if you watch the movie Spinal Tap, which haven't, what the hell are you doing with your life? You have to watch that movie. But
agreed.
But that's a very important venue in Spinal Tap, because that's where Puppet Show and Spinal Tap are, you know, billed incorrectly. So I'm watching this show, and at one point, there's this huge fight on stage, and one of the members walks off the stage. I had found out that right before the show went on, that is when the guitar player told the drummer that he had been sleeping with the singer who was the drummer's wife.
Oh,
whoa!
What a time.
If it doesn't get more dramatic than that, I mean, and you'll have to figure out all the names because I just left them out, but yeah. you can put the pieces together.
Well, actually, I can tell you, I have such a weird, that's, you're giving me goosebumps. I had a weird, similar story, situation happened to me. I went and saw Stone Temple Pilots. I saw Stone Temple Pilots recently with their new singer, and who's amazing. Okay. Amazing. Yeah.
Cool, I gotta check it out.
When they, so I'm backstage with the DeLeo guys, who are, again, some of the greatest songwriters, players of our time. I love Stone Temple Pilots. I've loved them since 95 or whatever. And I'm hanging out with Robert and Dean, and they're like, oh my God, this is the venue. And we're like, what? This is when we decided we had to fire Scott. And I'm like, what do you mean? And he's like, were you ever at our shows? I'm like, I was at the last show here. He's like, then you were here. Do you remember we did like a 25-minute jam? I'm like, yeah, I do. I remember thinking it was like this weird psychedelic thing. He's like, do you remember that we said that like we were starting a new sound? Well, what happened was literally Scott Weiland walks up to one of the DeLeo brothers and says, I need to take a shit in the middle of their set. And he's like, when? He's like, now. And like walks off stage. And he's like fucked out of his mind. So they start playing, and then he comes back on, and he like,
I think though, in his defense, he's part snake. So I don't think snakes shit all that often. So when someone has to actually, isn't it true? Corey, are you looking this up on the internet?
Because when
I think snakes only shit like about once a week. And so when that happens, I think you have to really be, you know.
Slash should have taught you that, Ryan.
But here is a true story. When I did play with
every
with
2 days, Slash, by the way. Every 2 days.
For anyone wondering, every 2 days.
Every 2 days. We'll see. Yeah. Even then, you got to let him do his thing. I mean, you just got to let him go. But when we were looking for singers for Slash the Snake Pit, before we found one of the best voices I've ever been able to record with in the voice of Rod Jackson, I'm biased, but I just think that motherfucker can sing like an angel. But one of my suggestions was Scott Weiland. You know, my first suggestion when we first got together and we made these demos and I heard Slash's riffs and I was able to put some of my guitar parts against his and we made these demos and they're slamming and I was like really excited about it. And I said, God, you know, who would be the perfect singer. He's got red hair and he's like screams. And he's just got this amazing person. He goes, look, dude, ain't gonna happen. So that was way back, you know, that when hell never say never. So my first attempt to get Axl to sing these Slash songs was shot down in flames. But then my second choice or my second suggestion, I did say Scott Weiland. And Slash goes, he goes, now why would I get Ryan, a guy like Scott? He's got, you know, where I just came from. You know what I'm just coming from. Why would I go? It's going to be even crazier. You know, I can't. But what happened a couple years later, Velvet Revolver.
Yeah.
There you go. So, I mean, there's no doubt about it. Scott Weiland is a rock star. Will always be a rock star. Mm-hmm. You know, was a rock star. One of the best performers. I got to see him a few times in Velvet Revolver. And I never saw these bands. Like, you see D'Antwoord. And you saw Stone Temple Pilots. I never got to see Stone Temple Pilots play with Scott Weiland. And my ex-wife...
He was wearing a dress. It was a little bit weird. Well,
my ex-wife said we saw him at the Universal Amphitheater, which is now, I think, the... what's the guy's... The Harry Potter ride at Universal Studios. They've changed it. But I was lucky enough to play this place called the Universal Amphitheater, which became the Gibson Amphitheater a couple of years. And then now it's the Harry Potter parking lot or something like that. But I my ex-wife went to see Stone Temple Pilots there. And she just goes, Ryan, I have seen the coolest rock star ever. And which was, you know... Because we were going to a lot of shows back in those days. I mean, I was able to see Oasis at the Viper Room with about 100 people.
Wow.
I mean, you know, and Oasis in their prime coming off of their second album, you know, it's like,
Well, but Scott Weiland is a testament that, like, okay, as a fan, because I loved Scott Weiland, and there's no question that he was one of the greatest voices of our time, wrote unbelievable lyrics, and was an unbelievable performer and a huge personality. But I can tell you that I saw Stone Temple Pilots, I don't want to say necessarily in their prime, but, like, definitely in a very good period where they were unbelievable with Scott Weiland. And then I remember I made a deal with my buddy. I got him Scott Weiland tickets at a very small venue with his solo band, and then he got me tickets to Metallica. And I was like, dude, going to see Scott Weiland somewhere small is way cooler than seeing Metallica. Well, we went and saw Scott Weiland, and for the first 15 minutes, he's just dancing with his cigarette, and he's so skinny that it's like, it was sad. It was sad. It was just like watching him, and his band was like third rate, like not even dudes that you would even look at second time walking down the strip. You're like, you couldn't have done better than this. And we walked out. It was literally like, what the fuck? And he's one of the greatest performers ever. So that's what happens when you do drugs, guys. Like, that's what fucking happens.
That's too bad to hear. I mean, yeah, I mean, there's bad shows. There's no doubt there's bad shows with everybody. I mean, I've had my bad shows. I mean, I learned my lesson with doing drugs and playing, performing the hard way. I mean, when I first moved to Los Angeles, and thank God it happened like when I first moved to Los Angeles, because we got this. I was in a band called the Jeff Scott Band, and I mean, I don't think I've ever even told this story on a fucking podcast. This is crazy. So there you go. This is your exclusive.
All right.
Everyone's gonna go, who's the band? Jeff Scott? What? No, he was on.
It's not Jeff Scott Soto, is it?
No, it wasn't Jeff Scott Soto. He was on Epic Records, and I love the fact that he was on Epic Records because that was the same record label that Cheap Trick was on. So I was, and I was 17. I might have just turned 18. I had moved down to Los Angeles. I got in this band, and we got an opening slot at the Palace, which is on Hollywood and Vine in Los Angeles, opening up for Tell Tuesday two nights. And there's a band called Tell Tuesday. There's another great band that I don't know if you guys have ever, if you remember this band out of Boston. They have a great single called Voices Carry. Amy Mann, she was the lead singer.
Oh,
you, everyone knows Amy Mann. Yeah. Everyone.
But so, we're from Boston. That's just weird. I feel like I would.
Wait, you're from Boston. You don't know Tell Tuesday?
I guess not.
Sacrilege, dude.
Well, yeah, now you've told me. See, now I've learned something the defender of the faith, Ryan Roxy.
I got stories, boy. So anyhow, we have two nights. The first night actually goes really well. And I'm thinking, great. We got another sold out night. And why don't I just make it even better? You know, I'll just go in the bathroom, do a little, and, make it better. And I came out of that bathroom, went on stage, strapped my guitar, and for some reason, couldn't remember a single fucking part. It all hit me, and I was flubbing notes, I was missing notes, and so that was like, that was it. And I said, no, my party days, obviously, they didn't end.
Do you know what your rookie mistake was?
What was that?
You have to actually practice while you're also on cocaine.
Because the way the brain works
is, so like if you actually do cocaine while you practice, you operantly condition yourself so that when you do the cocaine, yes, it comes back.
Take notes,
but
kids.
If you don't, that's
really bad advice. That's actually promoting drug use.
No, so I'm not promoting
it. Don't just do it at a show.
Practice with it. If you want to be able to be a proficient guitarist while you do cocaine, like ask Stevie Ray Vaughan. Like Stevie Ray Vaughan did so much cocaine, but he was one of the greatest guitarists ever in the existence of man. But that's because he practiced on cocaine.
Well, that show for me was Scared Straight. Because after that show, I said, fuck it. I don't need to forget guitar parts that I've really put time into learning, and playing just because I'm on some substance. So I left that behind. And to be honest with you, For all those shows that were in the 80s, all those crazy shows, always straight as an arrow. I might have had a beer or two back in those days, and there might be one of those. The worst thing I think back in the 80s were promo shows and radio promo shows, because you do like two or three songs, so it's basically just a license to have anything you want off the menu, drink as much as you want, and go up and play two or three songs. This is our radio promo show. It doesn't matter.
By the way,
we want you to be fucked up.
Question. So we thought we might cartoonize
you.
That's
great.
What did you think about that? No, that's so that's Paul, our actual
he's our drummer
from our band Lost Symphony. But I've been, but he can't hear you. But Paul, he says hello. the drummer says hello back.
I did the international wave. I think that would suffice.
Yeah, it works
but,
probably.
But the point is that now we were actually lucky enough we were able to hire him as our guy. So he's like our beats department, our art department. So everybody who's on our show gets the option. Yeah. And I said, dude, draw this dude. He's fucking badass and rock and roll. So we drew you with first off a Kiss like Alice Cooper like guitar.
No, it's an Alice Cooper song. That's his Alice Cooper eyes. There's no doubt. I would love it if that was a paint by numbers sort of thing. If you can paint by numbers.
Well, he's gonna color it in for you for the actual thing.
But also have a paint by numbers option is the point.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we can put it up there for sure.
Okay. All right. I'll put it in my merch store.
Well, we'll send it to you. In fact, we'll totally send it to you. If you want to put it in your merch store, go for it. I was actually going to tell you, I don't know how to get things over to Sweden, how easy that is, but we'll send it over to you.
Yeah. It takes forever. Yeah. It's better if I just come there on tour and we meet somewhere.
Well, I was going to say is, I was hoping to see Alice Cooper because it's funny because I was just talking to my fiance and I was like, I'd like to bring Haley, her 16-year-old, now my 16-year-old, to Alice Cooper. And she's like, do you think she'll like it? And I said, it's like going to see Phantom of the Opera. It's culture. Like your kid needs to see Alice Cooper get his head cut off. And that's a thing. And if she doesn't like it, then that's her own opinion. And she's allowed to not like it.
Yeah, it's become a generational rite of passage, I think.
It is, though.
It's a rock and roll rite of passage to watch an Alice Cooper show because it is like seeing the Rocky Horror Picture Show where it is interactive. And it's one of those things. It's almost like, you know, watching The Grinch Who Stole Christmas during the Christmas season, you know, and to see an Alice Cooper show, the script really hasn't changed all that much since the early 70s. I mean, obviously the band members have changed and the set pieces have changed. But if you look at the actual script of the show, it's basically Alice battling good, battling evil, whatever he wants to do, whether it's good or evil, you have to make up your mind for that. That's all subjective for you to figure out. And getting, you wouldn't say crucified, but executed, and then coming back, the resurrection. It's almost this story that's like old as time itself. So I think the Alice Cooper show is definite for any generation. And I see that. We see that at the shows. We see three generations, sometimes four. It's crazy to see great grandparents now at the shows.
Wow, it's really amazing. Weird. That's so cool.
I got to tell you that I have to ask because I remember when I first saw Alice Cooper. I mean, I saw you and I remember thinking to myself, man, this guy's amazing. But Alice has always showcased female, unbelievable virtuoso level guitarist. And it's not like they're better than you guys, but it's like he gives a spotlight because it's, and I want to know what it's like. You know, you're in a band now with Nina Strauss, who's an unbelievable guitarist. She's a great showwoman. What's it like to support that? But also, like, you're a Jedi guitarist of your own.
Well, I think we all know our role. I mean, everybody, that's the reason why I think the band truly does have a synergy within itself is because, and people react to the live band as positively as they do, because everybody knows whose name is on the marquee. There's no mistake, all right? It's not a band name. It is a band name, but we all know who the band guy. We all know that everybody, and it's happened, everybody can miss a show. Everyone cannot be available for one show. And that's works, and the show does go on. One guy. If he can't do the show, there's no show. And so, with that in mind, we all know our roles. And I mean, when you say Alice has always had female guitarist players, that's not really true, though, because he's
always. Always, for me and my generation, not like Dick Wagner, only when he's bleed
always
time.
Is 2011,
not Vincent
2011
Furnier.
And on? Because, yeah. I mean, because Orianthe came in, I believe it was 2010 or 2011. So, you know, always, it can't be the last 10 years.
Well, that's why you have
to. He's been around since the late 60s.
You see how it triggered you? You're now telling everybody who's listening to this program, you're setting us straight, and it's a great thing because it's one of those things where it's like, you're right. Yeah. Don't let me revise history with my stupid dumbisms.
Don't do drugs when you rehearse so you can do drugs when you play live. That's not good advice from Benny. That's really bad advice.
Yes.
And two, Alice has only had two female guitar players. I've been lucky enough to play with both of them. I think they're both great in their own ways. You know, both have their individual strengths. Orianthe, you know, greatest vibe, great soloing, bluesy feel to her. And Nita Strauss, you know, the Hurricane. You know, she's called herself the Hurricane, and it's well titled, because she's all over the stage, a complete show person, a great shredder, knows all that stuff, and a great band member, a team player, because that's the reason why the three guitar player attack.
You know who she reminds me of, and I say this with the greatest love, and because one of the greatest show people that I feel is like so under was overshadowed at the time, but you go back and watch the bootlegs. But she reminds me of, like, obviously a female version of like Jakey Lee in his prime, like where like he had all the crazy stuff with all the stuff she does with the guitars and the way she runs around the stage, and she just owns it. And if you go back, I mean, obviously Randy Rhoads passed away. So, like, how do you live up to Randy Rhoads? But then you go watch, those old Ozzy videos from, like, 84, 85, 86, and Jakey Lee's just owning it. And when I saw Nita the first time with you guys, I mean, I love, you know, Tommy and your playing. You guys are just, and you're always out there with different Gibsons and beautiful vintage guitars. And I'm a guitar nerd, so I'm already looking in the back, and I'm just like, oh, that's great. And out comes Nita, you know, with her Ibanez, and I'm just like, what? Oh, but why? And she could be playing a Les Paul right now. She's playing and she's choosing an Ibanez, and then she just murdered my face.
Yeah,
and I it just reminded me that
she wins you over with her personality, and I think that we play very well off each other. I mean, because the thing about the Alice Cooper band is that there's so many double guitar parts, double harmonies, all the amazing guitar duos that Alice has put together over the years, whether it's the original band, you know, with Glenn and Michael, or if it's Steve Hunter and Dick Wagner. I mean, these are classic guitar duos, and we have this luxury now of having three guitar players so that one can hold down
back to Maiden.
Mm-hmm. You know, one can do the solo, and then the complementing harmony to that solo, and then it just this wall of sound. The biggest compliment I think I've ever received from fans that come and watch the show is they say, "You guys all sound like one guitar during the verses and the choruses. It just sounds like this force, but then when the solo happens, everybody has their own individual styles, and your sound engineer cranks the solos and makes everybody stand out." And, you know, like I said, it's a testament to the crew that works within the show, but also with Alice for allowing us to get that spotlight. Not a lot of bands get to have, as especially when they're under a solo name moniker, you know, like Alice Cooper Band. I remember hearing folklore of a piece of tape being put across a stage and a certain unnamed lead singer said, "You can't cross this tape." You know, I would be hard to be in a band like that, because especially for myself or Nita Strauss, can you imagine Nita having to be behind the tape? It just wouldn't fly. So, you know, Alice is, if in anything, he pushes you forward to the front of the stage.
And it's smart. Like, Because that makes it a show. That makes it a show and not just a look at me, like follow the spotlight around that one guy. You know, that's why, I want to go see you. You guys are actually coming to Boston, I think, in September. So
I was going to say, our British ambassador, Steve Wood, has already told me since he's worked with Alice Cooper and the Vampires. He was like, if you want, Benny, I'll put you on the guest list. Yeah. But well, now I'm like, I need him to do that.
Good for him, because I have no idea how it's going
to
work.
So he might be lying to me.
Hollywood vampire. Pulling up the strings. Good for him.
Yeah. Man,
because
isn't that great?
All I know is I've been told is that it's COVID time still. We have no idea what our protocols are going to be. It could be like a lockdown, a bubble sort of type of tour, just depending on where we are
tour. I'll at least be in the masses.
Just so you know, I'll extend the invite if you're...
Maybe I can actually get some of my friends through Steve.
Yeah.
I'll tell him. He'll watch this.
I'll send him the link. I'll give him his exact time stamp.
Hey, card.
Steve, yeah. help the Alice Cooper band out. They need help. They can't talk to Alice. They can't look him directly in the eyes. You know this. Everyone knows this.
Don't look at his neck.
Don't let him. And if Joe Perry's in the room, fuck's sake, just fuck off. Okay. Now that we know this, help Ryan get his boy and some of his friends into the show. Will you? Because we don't know the protocol.
All right. When I check into a hotel room and we're with the Alice Cooper band, it's a Hilton. When the vampires check into a hotel room, it's usually a Ritz-Carlton. So there's a little bit of a difference. And I step on the bus, they step onto the private jet.
Yeah, right.
Right.
Well, that's like a peacocking fest. Yeah.
Before we get too far off, you were talking about just the Alice Cooper show in general and the performance with the three guitarists. It's interesting to me because nowadays it seems like a ton of bands, on the album there's, 40 layers of guitar. But, who wants to, hire multiple just toss those guitarists on backing tracks, send your one guy out there, and now you have like this manageable show, but it doesn't have the same effect as seeing those three real guitarists on stage.
It's not just the guitars too, it's the vocals. There are no backing tracks with the Alice Cooper band except for the cheesy interlude samples. Yeah. And even those are not high tech at all. We still have, I think, a Dr. Rhythm sampler that we use from like back in the 90s or early 2000s.
Amazing.
For the longest time, it was a do you remember Dr. Sample?
Oh, yeah.
I think Boss made it or Roland made it. Yeah, yeah. It was so old school and some you had to press it. So it's our drum tech that actually presses those little samples that we use to this day, like the scream when Alice gets his head cut off. I'm sorry to spoiler alert. When Alice gets his head cut off, that's not really Alice screaming. And
fired.
The sample before Poison, whatever that sound is that Desmond Child.
Maybe Feed My Frankenstein.
The lightning and the sort of here comes dinner.
I'm upset now. I mean,
and these are really, really old school samples. So it's not like we're on any sort of time code.
That's what makes it cool.
Yeah. There's some performance involved.
Well, that's what I like about your show is that it's so hard, and you understand this, being someone who's in a studio all the time, to not take apart, is there too much bass? Can you hear the guitars? Like, is that vocals? Is that real? Is that not real? Wow, I love how that snare sounds. You guys sound like a backing track, except it's
the
not.
One
of the things that I loved when I saw you guys is, one of you fucked up, and it made me happy, because I was like, it's real! It's all real! They're fucking... I love it, because you were so good that if I didn't know, I was like, are they lip syncing it?
I was gonna say that's another good thing about having three guitarists. Like, it wasn't me that fucked up. It was one of those guys.
Yeah, I think we're so good that I think our fuck ups are on the sample. So every once in a while we have to put a sample of someone fucking up because we never. No, the closest thing that we have to a machine is our drummer Glenn Sobel.
And
he is a machine. We actually call him the machine because his time is so steady and he bashes and keeps the foundation of the band rolling. So, yeah, That's the closest thing we have to a machine in the Alice Cooper band currently. So
he's also a showman, dude. That dude is like the school of Spinal Tap, like throwing things all over and like catching things and like, oh, here's behind my head, pulling that. And then like, here we go. And he's like, just watching him hit, like literally he hits like Kenny Aronoff, but then he does all that like Prince style. You know, those old Prince videos where they do all that crazy stuff. That's what he does by himself because he's a maniac.
I think this thing... And I never really told him this before, but I think that's way more of a nod and paying homage to Gene Krupa.
Oh, definitely.
The old school drummers that used to do that kind of stuff with the snare drum and the
tidal
and
wave.
So, I mean, I know who's the one of the most famous drummers, because
Shannon Larkin from Godsmack actually is very famous for doing the that craziness. He was in Wrathchild, and he totally does that.
I'm thinking of a guy 50 years earlier. Buddy Rich. I'm thinking of Buddy Rich.
Obviously, yeah,
I get the two confused sometimes, Benny. Yeah. But
Buddy Rich would come from the grave and smack you fucking silly if you were confused him with Gene Krupa. He would smack you. We know that they were equal.
I was talking about the drummer of Extreme.
Oh, Paul Geary
and Buddy Rich. Yeah, I was. That's what I was doing.
That Geary.
Okay. Yeah. But the thing is, Buddy Rich had a revolving drum kit decades before Tommy Lee. And if you don't believe me, folks, go check it out on the internet. You'll see it like it's on one of those, even before Johnny Carson. It's like an old, like Tonight Show. I think it's even before that. But he literally had a drum kit that revolved and did a 360, and he played drums while it was done. And it was, you know, the thing was held together by, you know, nails and fear and like probably, you know, yelling at carpenters all day or something like that.
Oh my goodness.
What age did you realize that Sammy Davis Jr. was also that level of a drummer?
Actually, just recently. Honestly, I just saw him do I saw a special on Sammy Davis Jr. because it took me so long to figure out.
I had no idea for
he had a glass eye. I didn't know he had a glass eye either. Was it Sandy Duncan or Sammy Davis that had a glass, or did they both have glass eyes?
Now you're confusing my wires. Sure. But I know Sammy Davis Jr. played mean drums.
I know, one of the best drummers out there. I mean, he would do all that side of traditional side stick snare drum stuff. But I'm more now interested in if Sammy Davis Jr. had a glass eye.
He did
have a glass eye.
All right, Corey, our resident researcher.
Paul says that he had a glass eye. Like, there's
he got a car accident and hit his face on the steering wheel and had to get an artificial eye.
And one of the best band names I ever heard at, and me and Alice actually agree on this, are the best rock band name, Sandy Duncan's Eye. That was literally a band name that we saw in an LA Weekly when we were on tour together one time. And Alice goes, what is this band called? Sandy Duncan's Eye. That's cool. So there you go. Gosh. And everyone, I think, in your audience is going, who's Sandy Duncan? And maybe you guys are all going, Siobhan? Sandy Duncan?
No, I don't know.
You have any good, you don't have any good Sandy Duncan stories?
Nope. No, but I wanted to comment on how cool it is to hear about, you know, the experience of playing in the Alice Cooper band. Because, like, for example, I'm in a band called Starset, and it's the total opposite. Everything is time-coded. It's a click track. There's content that pops up at, like, certain points. So, that is something that I miss out on sometimes that I enjoy in, like, other projects where there's room for spontaneity.
Like an orchestra?
Yeah, same with orchestra. That's what I love about orchestral music. Like you were saying, the wall of sound, there's so much dynamic. You know, you can have all the instruments playing at once, and then all of a sudden something drops out and there's like a solo, and it just comes out of nowhere. And that's so cool when that happens in rock music and another context, you know, that like very cool writing and the way it's all orchestrated and arranged makes a huge difference.
I think that's the one thing that the four of us sitting here on this screen that have a little bit different, I think it's a bit different than what the new school musicians are. If I could pass on some sort of good advice, not the advice that Benny was giving early, but some good advice is in one word, dynamics. Because we all know about dynamics. You know, the three, what, pianissimo to...
Yeah.
Where is the,
yeah.
Fortissimo, you go,
yeah.
PPP to FFF. And I think today everything's just F.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that that's why people like are starting to gravitate back towards records, because there used to be dynamics? Because if you listen to those old classical recordings, they go from whisper quiet to fucking loud. And if you're deaf, like in a band, you can't hear what they're saying or what they're doing when they're playing quietly. You have no idea. So you're like, that's why they compress the fuck out of everything. That's what Oasis did, was they basically made a record that was so loud it gave you noise fatigue. So one of the things about records is that they have a much larger dynamic sound range, mostly, than CDs. Now people are going back to having more of a range. But do you think that that's kind of why people are going back? Because those old records, it sounds different than the Beatles remastered now, where you can hear them breathing.
I don't think that at all, though. I think it's a really good point, but I think the reason why the people are actually gravitating back to records is for two things. One, musicians have finally realized a small way to take back and make some income out of music. And something tangible is something that a real fan of your band will actually have and appreciate. And for the fans themselves, that experience, the experience that I preach about and you guys probably talk about all the time, of listening to a record with cool headphones on, mm-hmm. you know, cool 70s, and reading those liner notes while you're listening to the music, and you're just like either dreaming of like what you want to do in life or just basically doing whatever, but you're engrossed in the experience of listening to music, reading liner notes. I think that whole thing is what's gravitating people back to some sort of fascination with vinyl. And the fact that, you know, look, musicians need some sort of income off of music. Music, unfortunately, has become a promotional tool for other things, whether it's touring, whether it's selling merch, whether it's actually selling their podcast or their subscription to Patreon or whatever.
And on that note, this episode is brought to you by Lost Symphony. Go to lostsymphony.com and buy a signed vinyl of Chapter 3, which is out right now.
That's some pretty good guitar players on it, Corey. Can you tell us what guitar players are actually on? Or maybe Siobhan, can you tell us what guitar players, do you even know what guitar players are on Chapter 3?
Yeah, we have Marty Friedman, we have Alex Skolnick, we have Angel Vivaldi, we have Richard Shaw.
Wait, who was the last guy? I missed that.
Angel Vivaldi. Yes. We have Richard Shaw.
Oh, wow.
Who else have we got? Ben, Corey?
We got Nuno Bettencourt.
How could you forget Nuno? He's going to be so mad if he watches this, which he won't, but if he watches it, because I'll send him it. He'll be like, why didn't you say my name first?
Because I get to hear it enough from you.
How do they all fit on the bandwidth? That's so much guitar for so little bandwidth. I mean,
spread out on different songs, so every song features some different people. That would be a lot of guitar players.
It's like that thing, too much metal for one hand.
Yeah, right? Well, our whole thing is more is more with this project. So,
speaking of dynamics,
we'll send you some vinyl if it's even possible. Probably not. I'll email you MP3s or something. Yeah. Hopefully you'll like it. You know what? It's one of those things where we had this delusion of exactly what you said, that I remember David Gilmour saying for the last Pink Floyd record, which has no vocals, that they released with Richard Wright before he died. I hope people listen to this with headphones on, you know, the whole record from start to finish. And you and I know that that's an illusion for most people of a certain age. Like, no one does that. They know songs. It's on
this
random.
This is what the music comes out of, you know?
Yeah,
this is
exactly. What the music comes out of. So, I hope that we can send you some stuff and that you'll just sit down with headphones and listen to it. And I know that you do this all the time. So basically, I'm asking you to work for free.
This is how I know you're an old schooler, Benny, because you said, for one, I'll send you, again, like email. You'll email me an MP3.
I'll fax you. I'll fax
you. No, an MP3 file. You said a file.
Yeah.
The thing is, people don't even do MP3s.
I'll send you the
link.
That's like
even another. I mean, at one point it was cutting edge to do an MP3, but it's like now it's all about you just send me a link so I can
We're gonna burn you a CDR, and Yeah, we'll make our own Sharpie label.
Can you send me a DAT tape of that, please? Because
I have it on Betamax, actually.
Yeah. Listen, at this point, we're at the end of our first hour here.
Round one.
With Ryan. Yeah, this is a blast, man.
A lot of fun.
Thank you for hanging with us.
Thank you so much. Ryan, where can everyone find you? Like, what's the best thing? Like, what are we promoting at this moment other than the fact that you're a legendary guitarist? You have In the Trenches, which is a great podcast. Defending the faith over there. And you played with like a lot of people from Slash to Gilby Clark. We'll talk about that in the next episode, but where can people find you?
The easiest and quickest way to find me is ryanroxy.com because that'll lead you to all the different other veins. But I'm most active on Instagram and obviously YouTube, which is Ryan Roxy Official on YouTube. Just go onto YouTube and put in Ryan Roxy. You'll find my channel. Would love for you to check out all the content, videos, podcasts, music videos, interviews, everything's there.
Sounds great. And we'll have links below. This has been 2020-2020-D.com. We'll see you on the next one. Thank you for checking out this episode of 2020. Please visit 2020-D.com. Like and subscribe to the podcast so you don't miss out on future episodes. This week's throwback clip is from episode number 82, featuring the one and only Mark Tremonti of Alter Bridge and the legendary band Creed. Check it out.
Yeah, I'd rather hear, instead of hearing some wizard on the guitar that's just absolutely killing it, and there's so many of them out there that just, make you want to put the guitar down, I'd rather hear that weird kid who's got a weird outlook on life, who's got a weird style, who was born in a cave and comes up with the weirdest stuff you've ever heard. I'd rather hear the creativity in a guitar player than somebody who can just murder every scale. I want to hear somebody who can take a scale and tear it apart, flip it upside down, and do something you'd never expect out of it.
Hi, I'm Daniela Clark.
I'm Barbara Ann Wild.
And we are the Honest AF Show.
Our podcast is real, honest conversation with our celebrity friends and pros.
Covering our anything but average rock and roll lifestyles.
All while tackling the hell that is aging and the battle of beauty.
Oh yeah, nothing is off the table.
The Honest AF Show is available wherever you get your podcasts.